Welcome to When They Popped. Let's rewind to a simpler time together and dive deep into the music, movement, and mania behind our favorite Y2K celebrities and trends. Hosted by Kelsey and Mary, it's time for another episode of When They Popped.
Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary. You guys, Kelsey went and saw Beyonce last night. And I've purposefully not asked for specifics and her takes throughout today to have an honest reaction on the episode tonight. So, Kelsey, tell us everything.
Well, first of all, excuse my voice if it sounds like I just rolled out of bed. I didn't. I've been up for several hours because who can sleep after seeing Beyonce? Not I. I'm just a mere human. I danced for 5 hours straight. Like, it was just the most joyful, inclusive experience. I was literally talking about Blue Ivy dancing to my husband, and I literally started crying actual tears. And he was like, I can't tell if you're just overtired. And I was like, I think it's a combination of everything, like the post-concert depression. And like, it's been 5 years since I last saw Beyonce during the Formation tour. And we don't get a lot of her. She's really, she limits her access as she should. And man, my parasocial relationship is just really off the charts with the little that she gave us.
Well, tell me, what was the standout moment from the show for you?
That's so hard to say. Okay, I will say, I love all the Renaissance new songs. I think one of the cool sort of homages that she paid to herself, because she's an icon, and I think it's funny when icons sort of self-reference. During Crazy in Love, her dancers had on these amazing little like jean booty shorts, these white tank tops, and then they came out with like these white fur stoles. And when she does her Crazy in Love like walk, you know, the walk.
Oh, the strut, you mean.
The strut. And to see all of those dancers in the outfit that she wore in the music video so long ago, it was so cool. I mean, because as long as I can remember, Beyonce's been playing on the radio. She sings live the entire time. Like, I could keep going on and on and on and on. But like, if you have the chance to see Beyonce, you have to. Like, you are legally obligated as a listener of this podcast to go see it. You will not regret it. It's truly just a beautiful experience.
So if you're on the fence, do it, is what you're like, saying.
There's no fence in this. Like, it's just go. Like, if you have an opportunity, put on some freaking sequins or some leather and a cowboy hat and go out the door. I did put a lot of effort into my outfit. In fact, I spent weeks trying to recreate her David Koma tie-dye look. If anyone's been following her on Instagram, you know, like the neon bright tie-dye look. She retired that outfit a couple weeks ago. Some people that like the girlies who got it. Like, I got a lot of compliments on it, but it was just
good.
Everyone was wearing like sexy black rhinestone like body suits, and I show up in like this tie-dye turtleneck.
It looked really good, Mary. Though.
I appreciate that.
She went above and beyond, and it looked amazing. So
she tried, you know, she tried. And I guess that's what matters. But it was really just so lovely. Okay, I need to stop talking about it now or I'll start crying again.
Okay, pivoting.
Okay, so Mary and I looked at the calendar because we're like really good timekeepers, I guess, as women in STEM.
We're type A, yes.
And so Beyonce has this lyric in 1+1 that goes, I don't know much about algebra. And I feel the same way, but we are able to do the simple math that this August 15th marks the 20th anniversary of the Cheetah Girls. So we had to mark this occasion by doing a fun little ode to Raven Simone before we could dive into the Cheetah Girls in our next episode. So this is like a little precursor, a little appetizer, if you will, because Raven was a Disney queen who we need to talk about.
And that'll segue us right into the next week when we do a deep dive on one of the best Disney Channel original movie franchises ever, in my very humble opinion. So let's get to it.
And before we dive right in, a quick disclaimer. We do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or performances in this episode. The purpose of these clips is for commentary and critique. So let's get into it. Our sweet Raven. There just are not many artists who enter the spotlight at 3 years old and stay there. But today's episode is dedicated to one just like that. Actress, singer, songwriter who can say she did just that. The one, the only, Raven Simone Christina Perriman Mede. Yes, she has 5 names, but you may also know her mononymously as just Raven, like Madonna, like Beyonce, simply Raven. Raven has won 5 NAACP Image Awards, 3 Young Artist Awards, 3 Daytime Emmy Award nominations, and she's been in some of the most iconic television shows of our generation. So we're going to talk a little bit about her upbringing, what those iconic TV shows were, and just sort of chronicle her rise to fame, or as we like to call it, when she popped. So as an infant, she worked for Atlanta's Young Faces, Inc., which was a modeling agency, and she was in some local print advertisements. By the age of 2, she was already signed with Ford Models in New York City, and she was in ads for truly the most iconic brands of our time, Ritz Crackers, Jell-O, Fisher-Price, like the toy company, and Cool Whip. If I could only eat one thing for the rest of my life, I think Ritz Crackers would genuinely be up there.
I had no idea she was with such like iconic staples. I mean, not only has she obviously been talented since she could breathe, but she was a really cute little kid, like undeniably.
So freaking cute. And America was introduced to that cuteness in her first role as little Olivia Kendall on The Cosby Show. So she starred in this show from 1989 to 1992. She was just 3 when she got the role. So she really came towards the end of the show. I think it was like the 6th season or something where she showed up. And we have to talk about The Cosby Show for a little bit. Nobody wants to talk about Bill Cosby specifically because he's a deplorable person, but we have to talk about the show because it's how Raven got her start. And just in case you guys missed the boat on this one, The Cosby Show was about the Huxtables. They were an upper middle class African-American family living in Brooklyn, New York. And the series was based on Bill Cosby's comedy routines that he would perform as like part of his stand-up act. And those were inspired by his family life. So it's sort of like loosely based on Bill Cosby's personal experiences. But this was a truly influential TV show. TV Guide ranked it 28th on their list of the 50 greatest shows. Did you ever watch the show, Mary?
I was a casual observer. You know, I wasn't glued to this. Like, it was a little
when it was on.
Yeah, but sometimes it'll be on like Nick at Night. And, yes. You know, it was funny. It was easy to follow. Just like I watched Full House basically for the Olsen twins because I thought they were so cute. I thought Raven was so cute in this that I would watch because of her sometimes.
Yeah, I definitely would catch it on like Nick at Night sometimes. We mentioned that TV Guide ranked it as one of their most 50th greatest shows. And we need to talk about TV Guide for a second because I like totally forgot that it existed. Do you remember like getting an actual like catalog, like the TV Guide in the mail? And it would tell you like what shows and movies would be on each channel. It was like that crazy looking grid thing for every single hour of the week. And then there was TV Guide Channel and it would show you what was on every single channel in like a never ending loop. And if you missed your favorite channel, you'd have to watch it all over again. Like, I think Nickelodeon for us growing up, I still remember it to this day, was channel 26, like just 26, because there wasn't like 300 channels back then. So if I like turned on TV Guide channel and it was in the 30s, like I just missed Nickelodeon so I could see what was on, I'd get so mad. Kids today, they'll never know a struggle. Like, I remember watching TV Guide channel and my mom would have like the literal catalog out and be like, oh, let's see what's on this weekend. I could like smell it. It smelled like a phone book, like that thin phone book paper. Another lost artifact, the freaking phone book. Anyways, back to The Cosby Show. We just can't understate the importance of The Cosby Show. In May 1992, Entertainment Weekly said that The Cosby Show helped make possible a larger variety of shows with a predominantly Black cast, including In Living Color and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So it was really impactful. And it's very cool that Raven was a part of such an influential TV show from such a teeny tiny young age.
She's definitely a trailblazer.
So not long after The Cosby Show wrapped, she was cast in her first ever movie. And oh my God, this is such an iconic. I keep using the word iconic and I hate myself for it, but I just don't know how else to describe how huge and impactful these movies that she has been and the TV shows that she starred in. So the one that I'm referencing and poorly setting up because my Beyonce delusion is seeping in is 1994's The Little Rascals.
Oh.
My delectable darlini. I will say that line until the day I die because I just love that movie so much. So Raven was cast as Stymie's girlfriend. So Stymie was the vice president of the He-Man Woman Haters Club. But not until Raven came along and they dated. So if I remember this correctly, it was a super brief role, but it must have been really exciting to be a part of this movie that had so many big stars in it. Mary-Kate and Ashley made a little cameo in it. I also found it super interesting that Whoopi Goldberg also has a cameo in The Little Rascals. So it's like a little foreshadowing to their future roles as co-hosts on The View nearly 20 years later. Isn't that cool?
I wonder if they talk about it on The View. I would love to see kind of if they reminisce and maybe Whoopi looks back and talks about how Raven was as a child. That'd be really interesting to see.
Right? Like a fun reunion.
Yeah.
So Little Rascals was a success. It earned $67.3 million worldwide. You know, not bad for your first movie ever. Like, pretty good. So Raven returned to the silver screen in the late 90s when she was cast on the TV show Hanging with Mr. Cooper. So this was a show that aired on ABC in September 1992 up to August of 1997, and it starred Mark Curry and Holly Robinson. So this series chronicles our key character. His name is Mark Cooper, who's played by Mark Curry. Kind of confusing, if you ask me. Both Marks, different last names that begin with a C. And the main character is an NBA player turned substitute gym teacher, gym coach. He later becomes like a basketball coach. And he's living with this hot girl as his roommate. And you could probably guess that they start dating and then they get engaged. So Raven stars in seasons 2 and 5 as Mark's tween cousin, who sort of plays that role of like his child. So she's definitely like a precocious, fun character that sort of brought into like mix things up. Now, I never watched this show as a kid. At least I don't remember if I did. I'm sure just like The Cosby Show, I would catch like reruns when it was on TV and I saw it on TV, I'd pop up. But Mark looks so freaking familiar to me. And that's because he was in the 2001 Disney Channel original movie, The Poof Point, which starred Taj Mowry. Do you remember this one, Mary?
No.
Okay, so we'll come back to you. Mark plays Taj's character's dad. So Mark is this scientist who, along with his wife, invents a time machine. So instead of sending subjects back in time, it actually rewinds their biological clock until they de-age so much they cease to exist. Basically, Benjamin Button. So someone ripped off Disney Channel original movie for Benjamin Button. Brad Pitt, what the fuck? And, you know, when they cease to exist anymore, like the time before they were born, that's the poof point. What a fun little science pun. As a woman in STEM, I like really appreciate that. So Mark and his wife accidentally zap themselves with their time machine. And Taj and his sister, who's played by Raquel Lee, they have to try to save their parents because they're like, oh, my God, why are you guys acting like teenagers? And they're like, oh, my God, our parents are going to reach the poof point. Now, Raquel Lee, who played Taj's sister in The Poof Point, she was actually one of the original cast members of The Amanda Show. She appeared in the first season and she was later replaced with Josh Peck. So we wouldn't have Josh if we didn't have Raquel. And Raquel also provides the voice for Nubia in The Proud Family. Oh. So she was like all over the place too.
I loved The Proud Family.
Loved, loved, loved. So there's my fun little tangent for the episode. Back to Raven. So she's running the silver screen. She has this fun cameo in Little Rascals. But her big, big screen moment comes in 1998 when she was cast in Dr. Dolittle. So this was like the revamp of Dr. Dolittle. So in this role, Raven played Eddie Murphy, Dr. Dolittle's oldest daughter. And this movie was a huge success. It made almost $300 million worldwide. I mean, I remember being mesmerized by this. I wanted to be a vet so badly when I was a kid. And I just thought it was so cool that Raven was such a budding star when this movie came out.
And just getting put in a movie with Eddie Murphy and just the success that this film saw and the longevity, it's still on rotation. This must have been like a real tipping point for her in a good way.
100%. I'm so happy that you mentioned that, Mary, because up to now, you know, she has these amazing characters. She has like this big movie under her belt. And you're probably like, okay, well, where does like the Disney of it all come in? Mm-hmm. Well, I would argue this is her tipping point. This is her pop point.
Yes.
In 1999, Raven was cast in the Disney Channel original movie, Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century. Mm-hmm. We have talked about this movie multiple times, especially in our Disney Channel original movies episode. But guess what? My hot take is still that Nebula was the real hero of this entire movie. She has the best wardrobe. Also, and my heart just really burst for her when she got to dance with Protozoa on the space day after they were saved from certain death. When he's like, "Oi, Nebula!" Like, when he's like waiting for her to dance, she's like, "No, you won the dance. You should do it, Z." And she's like, "Neb, go for it." Oh, I love it so much. So that was Raven's first ever Disney role. And as we all know now, it was just the beginning of her Disney journey.
It was more than a Disney journey, I would say. I would say there was a period of time that Raven ran Disney. Like, she was queen bee of that shit. And let's get into it. I want you guys to just hear this theme song and let it transport you back to a simpler time in all of our lives.
That's me.
Yes, you heard correctly. It's time to talk about the That's So Raven. Side note, this is obviously Raven singing the theme song with Orlando Brown providing the rapping and Annalise Vanderpool jumping in at the chorus. So this was truly a team effort. We'll get into it, but that's what made this show, I think, one of the many reasons so special. So Xenon was in 1999, and in 2001, Raven auditioned for a role on an upcoming series for Disney titled Absolutely Psychic, about, you guessed it, a teenager with psychic abilities. And she actually auditioned for the recurring role of Chelsea Daniels, who is Annalise Vanderpool. Subsequently, a pilot episode in which she starred as Chelsea, the best friend, rather than the central role, was filmed. But after the test audience responded so well to her, and the producers were so impressed by her talent, the program was completely rewritten with Raven in the main role, and she was made the lead character, Raven Baxter, and the series name changed to That's So Raven. How cool is that? You literally have a show named after you.
I literally love that. And I do feel like this show, it was like, oh, like if her name is Raven in the show and that's also her name in real life, like she should be someone who I know. Like that immediately signaled to me as like, she's a huge star. I should absolutely know who this is.
For those of you who need a refresher, the series is all about Raven and her hidden psychic abilities. We see episodes where Raven's having her visions of future events, and she has to, you know, also deal with the ups and downs of growing up. But Raven being psychic is a little bit of a twist, and she often will misinterpret the events that she foresees. So she'll just see a clip, but not really understand the full picture.
See it in my mind of her like standing off to the side and then it zooms into her eye.
We overuse iconic, but that vision face that she makes when it takes her to a vision is like, I will never forget it. I can see it forever. It's just so good. But she'll often use these, she'll see her vision and be like, oh my God, I need to stop this from happening, or I need to help so-and-so, they're in trouble, but not understanding the full picture. Sometimes she's actually making something worse instead of helping someone. And so it was a really creative plot, I would say. So her abilities are a secret, though. Her family knows, and she told her best friends, Eddie Thomas, who's played by Orlando Brown, and Chelsea Daniels, Annalise Vanderpool, along with her brother, Corey, who's played by Kyle Massey. But did you know just this year, Raven claims in an interview that she actually does have psychic abilities? Like, talk about perfect casting.
If you could see the future, would you want to?
Would I just see the clips like Raven does and not necessarily
like, would you even want the ability to?
That's a tough one, Kels. I don't know. Do you?
I don't think I would. I think it would just make me like fearful.
I'd misinterpret the shit out of him too. I know it would just make things worse.
We would overanalyze it. You know, ignorance is bliss sometimes.
Truly. But okay, let's get to a few of the deets behind the show. You guys know I love talking about this background information. So That's So Raven was the brainchild and the creation of Michael Porias and Susan Sherman. Michael is also known as the creator of a little known show called Hannah Montana. Ever heard of her? But this series debuted on January 17th, 2003 and ran all the way to November of 2007. It was responsible for many firsts for Disney, including becoming the channel's highest rated and longest running series at 100 episodes. The only show to surpass that was Wizards of Waverly Place in 2011. But again, this was a trailblazing show. Besides being the first show to hit the 100 episode mark, it also was the first show to have four seasons. You know, even Stevens, Lizzie McGuire, they would stop at three, but not That's So Raven. Raven was filmed in front of a live studio audience, and Disney created the series as its first multi-camera sitcom after the success of, as I mentioned, the single camera comedy series on the channel, such as Even Stevens and Lizzie McGuire, and they decided to push it and try the multi-camera sitcom. The show also launched the channel's first ever spinoff series with Corey in the House, and it spawned a franchise including soundtracks, dolls, episode DVDs, and video games. Merchandise has earned $400 million to date. So basically, this show was a cash cow by the sounds of it. So they had the first season in 2001. It was a huge success. And so it was renewed for a second season in April of 2003. And this is a little flashback to our last episode, Best Songs for TV and Movies. But prior to the renewal of That's So Raven, a musical episode, a very famous musical episode that's very beloved on this pod, a musical episode of Even Stevens was aired in 2002. And the success was just astronomical, and it led executives to ask producers to do something similar for That's So Raven. So they did. And the musical episode of That's So Raven, entitled The Road to Audition, was aired as part of the second season in 2004. As Kelsey so aptly explained in our previous episode, the success of these shows and their musical episodes gave executives confidence in the appeal and interest of this musical genre. We were eating it up. And I mean, it just opened the door for High School Musical and all these other musicals, Cheetah Girls, you name it.
And if you haven't caught up on last week's episode and you love Even Stevens and Cheetah Girls and all the things, you need to listen to our last episode because we talk about the Even Stevens musical episode in very deep detail and how it paved the road for so many fun Disney musicals. And it really helped Disney form a strategy that relied on its stars also having musical talent.
I would say that's when Disney popped, when they started. I mean, 100%. Disney's been popping perpetually, but for us, like when they incorporated music with their content, it was just next level. But okay, so again, season one and season two of That's So Raven is crushing it, and they got renewed for season three. And originally, the plan was they would tap out at three, just like all the other shows had on Disney. The maximum was three seasons. But the success of That's So Raven was hard to ignore. And so then in June of 2005, they broke the mold, and That's So Raven was renewed for a fourth season, which would consist of 22 episodes and then bring the program's total number of episodes to 100.
That's so many episodes.
I know. I don't know how they did it.
Damn.
But get this, they even ordered a film adaptation that was supposed to come out in 2007. And in the fourth season, that's when Raven was able to get a bit more hands-on and involved. She stepped into the role as a producer, and she was only 19 at the time. And that gave her input in casting, scripts, special effects, some of the like crazy slapstick stunts she would do. However, she did reject an offer to direct an episode, but hey, you can only take on so much sometimes.
Right. I mean, oh my God, she's doing so much.
Obviously, we only discuss trailblazers on this podcast, and notably, Raven was reported to be Disney's first African-American female star and the first African-American woman to have her name in the title of a comedy series. Like, right.
That's insane. That's like disappointing to me that Disney didn't have Black stars before this, especially Black women stars. Hopefully they're movies and shows are more inclusive now.
I hope so. Obviously, we've kind of aged out of Disney a bit, but I hope so. A bit. I still watch Disney Plus more often than I should.
I can't wait for my niece to be old enough to watch it, though, just so I can like revisit. I'm just curious, like, what are the kids watching these days?
You need to take her through all the classics, Kel, seriously.
Oh, yeah. Lizzie McGuire will be her first full century. I want a bra.
Yes, please. But not only was Raven just, again, trailblazing, but That's So Raven, the show itself, was nominated for Outstanding Children's Program during the 2005 and 2007 Emmy Awards. So they have two Emmy nominations. The show was reported to be the highest rating original program in Disney Channel's history, a record that previously had been held by Lizzie McGuire.
Mary, I had no idea that there was going to be a movie. Can you share more about that?
Yes. So in 2007, as you remembered, Kels, they ordered a movie to start being written as well. There was a script completed and pitched in 2010. The plot basically centered around Raven starting a fashion line, which would make sense. That checks out with her character was super into fashion. And Eddie and Chelsea would be in France helping her with that fashion line. But the film did not ever enter production, however, sadly, because as we mentioned, Raven was just too damn busy with all her other projects that she was juggling at this time to take on the movie. So
it's a bummer.
Bummer. But again, you can only do so much, Kels.
Totally. Lizzie got Rome. Raven was going to get France.
Yes. Yes. So besides just the creativity and great acting from the That's So Raven cast in general, Raven was widely recognized and applauded for her charisma, her stage presence, and even her physical comedy in the series. I remember just like cracking up at her during the show a lot. She was very relatable. She was just kind of like falling around, like always finding herself in kind of a mess. And it just made me feel like I wasn't the only person that was kind of running through life, like not knowing what they were doing and tripping literally along the way. But a lot of the show's success is credited to the actual like friendships and relationships and true chemistry amongst the cast. Most notably, the friendship between Raven and Annalise Vanderpool. And if you just like want to feel that warm, fuzzy feeling inside, 20 years later, Raven and Annalise are still very close. They have attended events and premieres together within the last few years, supported each other's individual endeavors, and have just had nothing but great things to say about one another. Annalise was just recently on the Christy Carlson Romano podcast and had a recollection about the racism that Raven was subjected to back at the start of the show. The fact that she was automatically being originally considered only as the sidekick. You know, that was how she was immediately typecasted. And once she got up there and just blew the producers and the audience away with her audition, only then did they even consider that, oh, maybe the lead of the show could be a Black woman. And Annalise recalled the instant connection and friendship that she and Raven had and how Raven fought for her to get the role as Chelsea. Annalise recalled just like a swarm, a mob of people trying out and auditioning for that part. And, you know, stories like that and of their friendship are just so pure. You don't hear it often in Hollywood. And the fact that it's still long-lasting and still present today just makes me so happy. And I feel like it's just such a key reason for the show doing so well. Like the people who played friends actually were friends. They weren't acting, really. That was the real life.
That is cute. Like, would she would always call Raven Ray. It didn't feel very genuine.
Yeah.
It was just very cute. I love that.
So Raven's obviously popping mid-pop in a prolonged pop. And as we said, she was busy as hell. And one of the things that probably kept her from doing That's So Raven, the movie, was her flourishing music career. And it all started back in 1992. Raven began her singing journey at the mere age of 7, and she had signed with MCA Records. And get this, she spent 1997 and 1998 taking vocal lessons from Missy Elliott. Ever heard of her? Like, no big deal.
That is wild.
I know. Like, who knew Missy Elliott was just out giving like vocal lessons? Where does one sign up? But Raven actually released an album in 1993 called Here's to New Dreams. And we got two singles from it. That's called That's What Little Girls Are Made Of. Oh, and Raven is the flavor. Obviously, I've never heard this. I was 2 years old when it came out. Just so cute. And actually, that's what Little Girls Are Made Of, one of those singles, reached number 68. So she's already cracking the Billboard Hot 100 at the age of 7. Unfortunately, the album was not successful. And so she was actually dropped from the record label in 1995. And let this be a lesson to you. Never give up and just don't get discouraged over setbacks.
Yeah, seriously. Also, PSA, her music video for both, they're on YouTube. Oh my God, Raven is so cute. And she actually sounds so good. So she's rapping away. She just does such an amazing job. So her Raven is the flavor is particularly very funny because it's like a rap where she includes like Disney characters. She'll reference like Alvin and the Chipmunks and Scooby-Doo. It's so cute. And she just projected so much moxie. I mean, this was a girl who you just knew like she was going to make it one day.
In 1996, similarly to the Olsons, I would say, Raven became a business owner. She started her own company with her father, and they founded Ray Blaze Records. And she signed a distribution deal with Crash Records for her second album, Undeniable, which came out in May of 1999. Again, the album didn't do probably as well as they hoped or expected. It sold only 2,000 copies in the United States. And there was only one single from the album, and it was a cover of Stevie Wonder's With a Child's Heart. I'm telling you, this girl likes to cover Stevie Wonder. That's all I'm going to say. But I thought this was kind of cool. In support of this album, she actually went on tour and opened for NSYNC on the NSYNC tour in 1998 and 1999. Okay, so now in 2003, we're entering the Disney days, and she recorded that classic cover of the Stevie Wonder song Superstition as the main theme for the film The Haunted Mansion. She signed a deal with Hollywood Records, a Disney-owned label. No surprise there. Clearly, our girl loves covering Stevie Wonder. This song, I loved it. It was all over Disney Channel. Were you into it, Kels?
Oh, very super. Oh my God, I really can't sing with the current state of my voice, but loved.
And on January 1st, 2004, Raven released a 5-track EP with Hollywood Records. It contained the songs Backflip, Bump, What Is Love, and Mystify. That following September, she released a third studio album, This Is My Time, which included songs from the EP, and it got heavy rotation on Disney Channel, that's for sure. Raven wrote on a handful of the tracks, which is obviously super impressive. I was a Backflip batch. Did you get into any of these songs, Kels?
Backflip is a friggin' bop. I need to see you to believe it. Also, can we talk about the music video? Like, the best part of music videos from this entire era is how everybody had a different cell phone. Like, her boyfriend has a flip phone, and then she has, like, a BlackBerry-looking thing that isn't actually a BlackBerry yet. Oh, it's just so good. And he's, like, talking on the phone because you used to talk on your cell phone.
Oh.
Now you're just texting on your cell phone.
Now you just let it go to voicemail. And
oh, my God. Yeah. Unknown numbers. Goodbye.
Raven's album, This Is My Time, debuted at number 51 on the Billboard charts, which is pretty good. It had a moderately successful first week of sales and about 19,000 copies, but it was Raven's first album to enter the charts in the United States. So that's like a big deal. We talked about Backflip and how iconic. I love her like deep. She has a lot of power in her voice and that song really shows it off nicely. And I think I understand now why I liked it so much because I discovered in my research it was written by Cara Diaguardi, you know, one of our producers we talk about on here all the time, and produced by Scott Storch. Did you ever listen to like Brooke Hogan?
Oh my God. Yes. I loved that show.
She did like her entire album with Scott Storch. So did Paris Hilton. And at the start of every song, they'd be like, Scott Storch. Scott Storch.
Oh my God. I totally forgot. It was like the original DJ Khaled.
Yes.
Bah, bah, bah. Or Jason.
But it all makes sense to me why Backflip is just a song that is near and dear to me. So also in 2004, we got Raven's appearance on the Disney Mania 2 CD. She sang True to Your Heart. True to your heart. It must be true to your heart. It's when the hands will This is another song we saw a lot of on Disney Channel. And oh my God, Disney Mania just brings me back to the simpler times.
I totally remember this. And so the other True to Your Heart that I remember was the 98 Degrees one.
Yes.
With Stevie Wonder. And then for her to cover that cover, I was just, oh God, it was so good.
Amazing. And also on that same album, Disney Mania 2, we got the Disney Channel Circle of Stars rendition of Circle of Life. And I remember, because we talked about this on our Brenda Song episode, I believe, and I rewatched it. And Raven, again, she had a very powerful voice, and she was a prominent voice on that track.
Yeah, I remember Raven got a ton of good coverage, good auditory yes. coverage on that one. And Chelsea did really well, too. She had like a nice little run in there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she was good. I'm glad they let her sing on all of these as well. But Raven also appeared on Disney Mania 3. She did a solo cover of Under the Sea. And another appearance from her on Disney Mania 4, again with the Circle of Stars, covering A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes. Don't let your heart be filled with sorrow, for all you know tomorrow, the dream that you wish will come true. And I think that's the one we actually talked about with Brenda's song, and Ricky Allman was in it,
yes,
and Ellie
yes,
and AJ.
Yes, yes. Okay, you're right. That's the one with and Elise Vanderpool.
But gosh, those music videos with all the different Disney Channel stars together was just really a Christmas present from Santa, like something very special. We did not know how good we had it. And fun fact, in her appearances, both as a solo artist with the Circle of Stars and with the Cheetah Girls, Raven has the most appearances out of anyone on a Disney Mania CD.
Oh, like she's featured on the most songs?
Yes, yes.
I love that. How amazing, because I just love that her career started from such a young age. It wasn't hitting, even though she was rapping about Disney. And then like all these years later, she comes back as the preeminent star of the Disney billion-dollar business. Like, it's just amazing.
It really is. And in 2006, we got a little music that goes along with the That's So Raven. And it's called That's So Raven 2, the soundtrack, which is filled with Raven bops, like Supernatural. And some call it magic. I loved Supernatural. It was kind of like funky, but like cool. I don't know. I just liked it. And she had also some contributions and collaborations from her co-stars like Orlando and Annalise. And in support of her album, This Is My Time, and the That's So Raven 2 soundtrack, Raven went out on her first headlining tour that kicked off in May 2006. Who knew Raven went on a tour? I'm sad I missed it.
I know. Not me. What?
Okay. So I just want to pivot right now quickly to something notable Raven had going on around this time in her acting ventures. And in 2004, she was cast as Princess Asana in Princess Diaries 2. And okay, I'm going to be real. While not nearly as beloved as the first, the sequel was still really good, and it had a worldwide box office gross of $134.7 million on a $40 million budget, and the majority of the original cast returned for the sequel. We've talked about this before. This is like the unicorn. This is what you need for a sequel to even have a chance at a successful run, in my humble opinion. But what was incredible about this to me is Raven's participation in the soundtrack. The song Your Crowning Glory is a duet with Raven and Julie Andrews. Your love will see that it's your crowning glory, the most glorious part of you. Fun fact, this was the first time Julie Andrews had sung in public or on screen since she had this infamous throat surgery in 1997. I don't know if you guys know the story behind that. I'm very fuzzy with it, but she had like throat surgery and the doctor did a bad job and she like sued them, but she never was the same. Probably lost some confidence as well.
Yes.
Yes. Just a nightmare for someone who was a singer. So Raven has looked back in recent years to kind of reflect about her favorite moment from her Disney career. So in all the things she's done for Disney, That's So Raven, singing, albums, whatever. And she says the highlight is this moment with Julie Andrews. She said, quote, Mary Poppins wins. Being able to sing with the Queen, Mary Poppins, was life-changing and awesome for a young female who idolized that movie and wanted, now looking back, I wanted to be Dick Van Dyke and just be her sidekick. So she's getting to perform with someone she grew up idolizing, and she just wants to be there to support her and kind of be her number two. I'm sure Julie Andrews may have been nervous or had trepidations about performing again since that surgery. And so I just thought that that was a really special story, and what a cool moment for Raven.
That is so special. How cool to idolize someone your whole life and then have an opportunity to sing with them. That's amazing.
So Raven had a fourth studio album called Raven Simone that came out in April of 2008. Just a reminder, she went on her headlining tour back in 2006. This is just 2 years later. There were some heavy hitters that worked on this album. Sean Garrett, he has worked with Beyonce, The Clutch. They've worked with Timbaland and Ciara. The only single released, however, was a song called Double Dutch Bus, and it was a cover, another cover of Frankie Smith's 1981 funk track. The single was released in February. The album debuted at number 159 on the top 200. Raven did plan to go on a tour to promote the album, but due to quote-unquote unforeseen difficulties, the tour was postponed and obviously never happened. In May 2016, Raven released two new tracks online called Sarah. You can be my best friend. And Cruise Control. It was the first time in 8 years she had released new music since that self-titled project in 2008. Raven also released the single Space Truck in April of 2020. And she is set to release a studio album titled The Reintroduction. What a great title. I don't know when that's supposed to be coming out, but I'm excited to check it out. We love that voice. But so that's where we are with Raven and her music. Kelsey, did you know that Raven has actually appeared on Broadway? Like yet another milestone to check off her list.
Is she going to get an EGOT?
Oh my God. She definitely has potential to EGOT. On January 31st, 2012, it was confirmed that she would appear in the Broadway musical Sister Act. And this was her Broadway debut. And she started in March of 2012 and finished in August of 2012. Like, what a venture. Like, just so impressive. Big screen, Broadway, Billboard charts. And in 2017, she's been in movies. She's working on, you know, 4 seasons of That's So Raven. She's also working on a little franchise known as the Cheetah Girls that we'll get into in much detail next episode. Then she does some movies for TV. She has her big screen debut in College Road Trip. And finally, in 2017, I think we were all just on a nostalgia kick and ready for a blast from the past. So in 2017, Raven and Annalise, friends in real life, IRL, and in the show, were reunited once again, and we were gifted with another spinoff from That's So Raven, and that's called Raven's Home. Raven's Home, no matter the weather, you know we gon' shine. There for each other, you know it's our time. Yep, that's us. The premise, briefly, is Raven and Chelsea, still best friends, both divorced single mothers now, are raising their children in an apartment together in Chicago.
Aww.
I love that. But the house is turned upside down, if you will, when they realize that Raven's son, Booker, has inherited the same psychic abilities that his mother has. Obviously, Raven's a boss bitch. She was a producer and a writer on this show, and it's currently in its 5th season. Now, let me tell you, it gets a lot of great reviews. The critics have written really positive things about the show and Raven's acting.
That sounds so cute. That's like the movie that we never got.
You're right. A little tidbit that I loved when reading about the show is Adrienne Bailon. So Chuchi from Cheetah Girls played Raven's bully in the original That's So Raven. And she was brought back in season 5 of Raven's Home to reprise her character, but now she's a high school principal to Raven's children. Like, I love that. I love that they brought her back. I love that they kind of recalled the previous plot. Like, I just think that's great.
Super cute. It's like a Cheetah Girls reunion.
I know. They must be friendly.
She was also on The View, wasn't she?
She was. Were they together on The View?
I think Adrienne came after Raven.
Okay. They've both been on The View. They've both been in The Cheetah Girls. They've both been in That's So Raven. They've both been on Raven's Home. I know they must be friends. There's no way they're crossing paths that many times to not be. So also another little tidbit I found that I loved when researching Raven's Home was Takiya Crystal Kama, aka Tanya Baxter, aka Raven's mom from That's So Raven. She also reprised her role in season 5 of the series. In case you forgot, she actually left That's So Raven in season 3. And, you know, the storyline was that she was going to pursue her education in London. You know, mom was off to get her degree. And so that's why we weren't seeing her on the episodes. However, she actually had to leave the show to care for her ailing grandmother that she had committed to take care of. And so I have a lot of respect for her, you know, for that. She left a very lucrative show to go be with her family. And I just love that she was able to kind of have this moment and return and reprise her role. As I said, this show has continued to pull in positive reviews and ratings from critics. And it's obviously something that can't be ignored. It's really impressive that, again, a sequel spinoff type show is able to do that. So after going through this episode, I'm going to return to my statement that Raven was that bitch of Disney Channel, and she ran the show and acted her way to the top. She just was so talented.
Some may say she bopped to the top.
Bop, 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 bop to
the top. She bopped to the top.
She really did. So again, just a reminder, if you have made it this far with us, please do not think we forgot the Cheetah Girls. The Cheetah Girls are getting their own episode. We just thought we would start celebrating the Cheetah Girls' 20th anniversary by honoring one of the most recognizable Cheetah Girls.
So there may be only 4 Cheetah Girls, but you should give us 5 stars if you love today's episode. That's right. Head over to Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts and click that little 5 stars and leave us a review, because if you do, we may just read it on one of our episodes. Today, we are going to read Lamine428's review. She very kindly gave us a 5-star rating and aptly titled this review, Woa. They said, this podcast is so informative and entertaining, ! Short and sweet, just the way we like it. Once again, if you have constructive feedback for us, Send that to our DMs. We don't need everyone seeing that anymore.
We are fragile AF, but we appreciate you all. And thank you for sticking with us and just being our little Y2K family. We appreciate you.
Thank you all for listening. Have a great week. And we'll be back next week with the Cheetah Girls. Cheetah Girls.
Cheetah Sisters.
Bye. Bye.